listening to Renegade Broadcasting. Welcome to The Blitz. This is your host, Kyle Hunt, coming to you right here on RenegadeBroadcasting.com. Today's date is January 17th, 2019. Thank you so much for listening. Go on over to RenegadeTribune.com for much more, and also HeathenHerbs.com. Please do support the network by purchasing some products made right here from Renegade HQ. And also, if you can spare it, please do consider supporting the network in general. We certainly could use it, and we are working nonstop to bring you some of the best content available. Tonight on The Blitz, I am discussing an interesting phenomenon here with you, and that would be related to psychic powers, clairvoyance, ESP, telepathy, that kind of thing, and also how it relates to genetics and the military applications of it. Oh, this is a very real phenomenon, but that does not mean you should trust every clairvoyant or psychic out there. In fact, if they are asking for money, they could very well be a fraud. There are a lot of people who use parlor tricks, essentially, to mimic something that is very real. Let's get a brief overview of clairvoyance first. The term clairvoyance, from French clair meaning clear and voyance meaning vision, refers to the ability to gain visual telepathic information about an object, person, location, or physical event through means other than the known human senses. It is often called ESP or extrasensory perception. For some, clairvoyance is innate, while for most people, it can be developed through various psychic development exercises, meditation, and yoga. Clairvoyance today falls under the heading of pseudoscience or paranormal psychology. There have been anecdotal reports of clairvoyance and clear abilities throughout history in most cultures. Often clairvoyance has been associated with religious or shamanic figures, offices, and practices. For example, ancient Hindu religious texts list clairvoyance amongst their forms of clear experiencing as siddhis, or perfections, skills that are yielded through appropriate meditation and personal discipline. A large number of accounts of clairvoyance are of the spontaneous variety among the general populace. For example, many people report seeing a loved one who has recently died before they have learned by other means that their loved one is deceased. While anecdotal accounts do not provide scientific proof of clairvoyance, such common experiences continue to motivate research into such phenomena. The earliest recorded somnambulistic clairvoyance is credited to the Marquis de Puysegur, a follower of Franz Mesmer, where we get the word mesmerize, who in 1784 was treating a local dull-witted peasant named Victor Race. During treatment, Race reportedly would go into trance and undergo a personality change, becoming fluent and articulate, and giving diagnosis and prescription for his own disease as well as those of others. When he came out of the trance state, he would be unaware of anything he had said or done. This behavior is somewhat reminiscent of the reported behaviors of the 20th century medical clairvoyant and psychic Edgar Cayce. It is reported that although Puysegur used the term clairvoyance, he did not think of these phenomena as paranormal, since he accepted mesmerism as one of the natural sciences. Clairvoyance was a reported ability of some mediums during the spiritualist period of the late 19th and 20th centuries, and psychics of many descriptions have claimed clairvoyant ability up to the present day. Quick note, I've been to Casadega many times. It's not all that far from us in Florida. It's an interesting little place. I've never paid any of the psychics, but this is one of these places going back many, many, many years, over 100 years, that is reportedly a hotspot for psychics and healing and that kind of thing. It's actually an interesting place, the woods around there and the water. I've gone there to hike around in the woods, not really to experience any of the clairvoyance there. But in any event, there are places like that. Casadega is a fairly famous spiritualist community. Early researchers of clairvoyance included William Gregory, a chemist, Gustav Pagan Stecker, and Rudolf Tischner. These were largely qualitative experiments in which selected participants sought to identify a concealed target image or to provide accurate information about the history of a target object. We'll get into this in just a little bit. Charles Richet, the noted physiologist and later Ina Jeffson, a member of the Society for Psychical Research, introduced more quantitative methods. A significant development in clairvoyance research came when J.B. Ryan, a psychologist at Duke University, introduced a standard methodology with a standard statistical approach to analyzing the data as part of his research into extrasensory perception. Perhaps the best-known study of clairvoyance in recent times has been the U.S. government-funded remote viewing project at SRI/SAIC during the 1970s through the mid-1990s. At least those studies amongst these did not involve agents visiting or being otherwise aware of the target sites. Some parapsychologists have proposed that our different functional labels, clairvoyance, telepathy, precognition, etc., all refer to one basic underlying mechanism, although there is not yet any satisfactory theory for what that mechanism may be. Numerous spiritual philosophies contain the notion of an inner third eye that is related to the Ajna chakra and also the pineal gland, and to which is attributed significance in the mystical awakening or enlightenment, clairvoyant perception, and higher states of consciousness. This idea occurs historically in ancient Central and East Asia, and also in contemporary occult theories relating to yoga, theosophy, pagan religions, and New Age spiritual philosophies. The secretory activity of the pineal gland is only partially understood. Its location deep in the brain suggested to philosophers throughout history that it possesses particular importance. This combination led to its being regarded as a mystery gland, with mystical, metaphysical, and occult theories surrounding its perceived functions. So that's just a brief overview of the subject. One of the people in the 20th century who really helped to bring this subject to the public's attention was the person who was responsible for the Pure Food and Drug Act, Upton Sinclair, who wrote The Jungle. He was a muckraker, and he actually wrote The Jungle about the awful conditions for workers in Chicago's meatpacking plants, but the public was more outraged when they found out what was happening to the meat that they were consuming. Here is something from Atlantis Rising magazine. Upton Sinclair and Mental Radio. One day, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Upton Sinclair, who wrote an expose of the meatpacking industry, The Jungle, so devastating that it forced the passage of the Pure Food and Drug Act, discovered that his wife, Mary, had the ability to intuitively locate research notes he thought he had irretrievably lost. Sinclair tells us in his book on telepathy, Mental Radio, from 1930, that he was in the habit of jotting down notes on scraps of paper, sticking them in convenient places, and then being unable to find them. There was a particular occasion when he searched through the entire house for an important scrap of paper, and then going outside, worked out the direction of the wind, and examined all the scraps of paper on the lawn that might have been blown forward by it. His wife Mary, whom Sinclair often called by her middle name Craig, weird, arrived home, saw the predicament he was in, and said, "Come, let's make an experiment. Lie down here and describe the paper to me." Sinclair did so. His wife took his hand and after a moment of concentration said, "It's in the pocket of your gray suit." Sinclair thought that was impossible. He had thoroughly searched that coat. But his wife got up, found the coat, and extracted the missing note from a pocket. Sinclair hadn't looked hard enough. This might seem like a minor event in itself, but Mary tracked down innumerable objects in this way. In Sinclair's office miles away, his secretary had misplaced some typewriter components. Mrs. Sinclair was able to remotely view, through Sinclair's mind, the location of the missing components. Mary constantly and inadvertently saw what her husband was thinking or reading. The phenomenon was so pronounced that she wondered if some controlling force in her own mind weren't enabling her to make her husband think or read what she wanted, and even reach out for certain books and magazines. She decided not. But in Mental Radio, Sinclair tried to figure out which of Mary's personal characteristics contributed to the paranormal gifts she did have. He noted that Mary had a too tender heart, writing that the griefs of other people overwhelmed Craig like a suffocation. People, often total strangers, constantly and instantly poured out their troubles to her and asked her for advice. Often she came away from these draining encounters with tears in her eyes. From her girlhood on, Sinclair wrote, this capacity for extreme empathy enabled Mary, / Craig, to locate all manners of things. Almost as if that empathy extended to the non-living physical world immediately surrounding her. As a girl, she found missing domestic implements, missing animals, and missing people. Sometimes she knew when friends or family had abruptly turned up in unexpected places. In her adulthood, this quality could express itself in painful ways. Call of the Wild author Jack London was a close friend of the Sinclairs. In late 1916, Mary became extremely worried about London, who lived some distance away, and insisted that he was undergoing acute mental distress. 2 days later, the Sinclairs learned their friend had committed suicide. In 1930, the two attended a séance held by famous psychic Arthur Ford and apparently communicated with the channeled spirit of London. Mary told the discarnate author that she had known when he was about to die. The shade answered, "I'm sorry I did it, but now I'm out of it," and then departed. Being able to retrieve missing research notes was an important attribute for the wife of a man who wrote so many books and so quickly as Upton Sinclair did. Born in a Baltimore boarding house to... Okay. Let's just move on from there. You all can actually check out Upton Sinclair's Mental Radio for free. If you go over to RenegadeTribune.com, there's a link in the post I published, Upton Sinclair's Mental Radio, which will bring you to sacred texts where you can read the whole book. It's an interesting study, for sure. And this guy was a serious journalist. And he wasn't alone in studying this. It's not just anecdotal evidence. They started doing scientific studies. And if you really look into it, you will learn that this, in fact, does exist. Mentioned in the first overview was J.B. Ryan, who was doing these scientific studies. And I have a quote here from Extrasensory Perception by J.B. Ryan from 1934 about the heritability of clairvoyance. You can read through his book. That also is available for free online if you want to check it out. You could read through his book and look at the scientific studies he was doing. But my focus here just is on how... Let's take that for granted for now. You can do your own research, come to your own conclusions. But let's wonder, if there is something to clairvoyance, is there a genetic component? Does it have to do with the blood? Is it related to relations? My impression is that there is some heritable basis for marked ESP ability. When I learned that the mother of a certain individual had possessed mediumistic ability, I rather expected to find a good subject in him, and this judgment proved to be correct. All my major subjects, except one, have a parent or aunt, and often both, who are reported to have had at least one definitively parapsychological experience. And the one exception states that the mother is very intuitional, which, as she used it, means clairvoyant in small daily things. In five of the other seven cases, there's more than one relative that has been parapsychic. These are all, with one exception, on the same side of the family, too, that is, always blood relations, but are of both sexes. So men and women can both be clairvoyant, and you're much more likely to find a clairvoyant in a family of people who, some of them, are clairvoyants. And in particular, there seems to be clairvoyance among, well, I guess you could say the Celtic people. With the Celtic people, there's something known as second sight. And this was written by Barry R. McCain. I republished it over on Renegade Tribune. The second sight, or Andara Saled, I don't know, is one of the more curious but constant cultural phenomenons in Celtic lands and those places where Celts have settled around the world. It is the sixth sense, the ability to see and perceive images or knowledge of events, of death to come, either near or distant. It is most associated with Gaels of Highland Scottish or Hebridean ancestry, but it is also known throughout Ireland and Scotland. Modern science, in an attempt to classify the queer phenomenon, describes it as the paranormal perception at a distance in time and space, and the parapsychologist places the second sight alongside ESP, or extrasensory perception. A frequent vision seen by those with the second sight is a premonition of a death shortly to occur in the community. This can take the form of seeing an apparition of the person, his wraith, no matter how far away the person might be. There are also reports of those gifted seeing lights around the person that is fated soon to pass. Sometimes the second sight concerns more mundane occurrences, such as the sure knowledge that comes to those gifted of a future outcome or occurrence. This is not a case of luck or coincidence, but rather the complete, certain, and accurate knowledge of an event in the future, or even a case of just knowing where something that has been mislaid is. The second sight is called a gift, but is not considered so by those afflicted with the sense. The episodes come on them not of their own choosing, but in spells which they have no control of. The burden of knowing where death will call among friends and family, or just the burden of knowledge of the nature of people, or their never-to-be-realized dreams, etc., often makes those with the sense solitary by choice. They will often seek to live in wooded cabins, or seashore, or mountain homes, places where they do not have to discourse with people, just to escape episodes of the second sight. They live lonely lives of solitude, deep in thoughts and knowledge of how mysterious life really is. Science only now is perhaps providing some explanation into the second sight, as leading physicists develop theories into quantum physics, into string theory, or of multiple universes and dimensions no further away than our fingertips, perhaps some explanation into the second sight can be understood. Perhaps in the population among certain people, in Scotland, for instance, some families have long had abilities to perceive these things, to have access to time and space, not as a linear progression, but access to the entire flow of events. The second sight is thought to be hereditary, and it runs in some families. As is often the case in genetics, the second sight may skip one or two generations and then return like some regressive trait for hair color or shape of ears. I think he might have meant recessive. The phenomena is much too authenticated to pretend it does not exist. While this is so here in the 21st century amid a society based on consumerism and values taken from a very material world, instances of the second sight seem to be waning. The massive intrusion of media, the incessant TV and radio programs, cell phone signals, satellite communications, computers, and more could very well make the all-too-fragile links to the other world too frayed and cloudy for those with a second sight to perceive their reality anymore. Only in rural areas in Scotland and Ireland, and the southern hills and uplands in the United States, where so many Irish and Scottish settled, are there still reports of people with the second sight. Isn't that interesting that perhaps all of the media, the TV and radio programming, the cell phone signals, computers, 5G, that it could be severing our links to this fragile other world? It could be preventing us from tapping into our paranormal, as it's called, abilities. Perhaps this is one of the reasons that they've put it out, to make us less powerful. Rolling out 5G to ensure that we no longer can really see, that we are not able to use our innate powers to defend ourselves. Could be. If you're able to have some kind of clairvoyance, then you can be one step ahead of your enemies, couldn't you? Ah, yes, and this is why our enemies have been scooping up clairvoyance for quite some time. Or getting rid of them. In my opinion, there has been a concerted effort to do away with a particular bloodline. And I am talking about the Rh negative bloodline. Both Sinead and myself are Rh negative. And it really does seem that a lot of the truth seekers out there, the rabble rousers, are also Rh negative. But there are some people out there in the alternative media who want you to think that Rh negative people are all lizards and we're all evil because, well, some of the royal families have Rh negative blood. It is a powerful bloodline. And perhaps some of the Rh negative rulers out there want to get rid of the rest of the Rh negative people. Oh, the peasants, the Rh negative common man. Because Rh negative blood could be a legitimate threat to their authority. This is out of blastingnews.com. People with this blood type have these bizarre abilities. I just thought this was interesting. They're claiming that Rh negative blood is actually literally blue blood. I can't really verify this, but it makes some sense. If your blood lacks the Rh factor, you probably have some curious traits, but you are not alone. Study after study has come to the same conclusion, and that is that people who lack the rhesus protein in their hemoglobin are a rare breed indeed. There are spiritual and/or psychic capabilities that have been linked to individuals who fall in this group. Sleep paralysis, night terrors, the ability to heal, cause electrical appliances to short out, and being empathetic or in tune to the feelings of others are just a few of the oddities that these blue bloods find they have in common. Without the rhesus protein, the blood is indeed blue. The rhesus protein is said to link humans to the rhesus monkey. For whatever reason, a small segment of the population, about 15%, do not have the rhesus factor. Real quickly, the Basque people of continental Europe have the highest percentage of Rh negative blood. They also have a language that is not related to any other European languages. Very interesting people. But outside of the Basque people, if you want to find a lot of Rh negative blood, look to the redheads of Ireland and Scotland, where we already determined that second sight is fairly prevalent. Scientific studies also indicate that without it, the blood actually does have a blue color to it. So Rh negative blood actually does have a blue color. They're not linking to anything for that claim. This is considered to be a recessive trait, which explains why one sibling may have it and the others do not. Actually, both Sinead and myself come from Rh-positive parents. It's perhaps not just a 1 in 4 chance, as the Mendelian genetics would have it, but perhaps Rh negative people are needed at this time. So the carriers for Rh negative blood are producing Rh negative children. It could very well be the case. Called here on a mission to do something. To overthrow our sick ruling class. There are many theories regarding blue bloods, including that they derived from aliens, extraterrestrials, or fallen angels. Facebook has groups for sleep paralysis and night terrors, where Rh-negative blood seems to be a connecting factor for many. Men and women who are missing the rhesus factor in their blood indicate that they are loners, feel as if they do not belong, have a heightened awareness and strong discernment or psychic abilities. There are also YouTube videos of people sharing stories regarding this curiosity of life. I'm going to get into some of the supposed abilities that people have. High IQ, one of them, ability to heal and disrupt electrical appliances, yes. Oh, yeah, that's actually probably when I first came across Rh-negative blood being powerful was when I was in college, and I noticed how whenever I'd walk by all these street lamps, because they had the whole campus is lit up, you know, a lot of the times they would just turn off when I'd walk by, and I'd turn around, and then they'd start back up. So as I walk by, these streetlights turn off. So I search the internet to see if there are others out there like this. They're known as sliders, streetlight interference, SLI, and then they just added on DERS, sliders. And I saw that it was often associated with Rh-negative blood. I didn't even know that I was Rh-negative at the time, but that could very well be why these lights were going dark when I'd walk past. Very, very interesting phenomenon. The streetlights, apparently, somebody brought this up to my attention, that they turn off when there's light on. So perhaps there is some kind of bioluminescence that we're not seeing that these streetlights are picking up when somebody is walking past and they're giving off a lot of this invisible light, you know, maybe from a black sun inside of themselves or something like that. These streetlights say, oh, it's daytime, I'm going to turn off. And then they turn back on once that light has passed by. That's just a theory somebody had, but it makes a little bit of sense to me. Here are some special powers that Rh-negative people seem to all have in common. 1, empathetic and compassionate, tend to be healers. 2, psychic and remarkable intuition. 3, mysterious. People often tell you that they can't figure you out. 4, dreams are precognitive, or psychic and vivid in nature. Oh yeah. 5, feeling that you don't belong. 6, higher IQ than normal. Not going to brag. 7, increased sensitivity to heat and light. 8, truth seeker. 9, have a sense of mission in life. 10, have an extra rib or vertebrae. 11, ESP ability. 12, love of space and science. Oh yeah. Just check out the NASA channel, man. 13, vision and other senses seem to be more sensitive. 14, lower body temperature. That's me. 15, cannot be cloned. I don't know about that. 16, higher blood pressure. Some are lower. 17, piercing eyes. 18, have predominantly blue, green, or hazel eyes that can actually change with moods. Sinead's eyes will change. 19, ability to disrupt electrical devices. 20, oh man, I've blown so many computers, by the way. 20, deep thinkers. 21, creative, art, writing, poetry, crafts, baking, making, and designing stuff, building businesses, music, etc. And freedom to express creativity is important. 22, seem to always appear younger in appearance than the exact age. I still get carded at 35, by the way, which I like. 23, have red hair or natural reddish highlights. People think I'm a ginger. I'm not. If you actually take a look at me, I don't even have any freckles on my face, just on my shoulders and things. 24, have difficult pregnancies and births. So Sinead's discussed this, and they always try to get people to take the Rogam shot. 25, are easily frightened. 26, prone to more allergies while having a better resistance to certain types of diseases, such as HIV, smallpox, bubonic plague, etc. Sinead's very gets allergies. I don't. And we're pretty disease resistant. Pretty healthy. We don't go to the doctor, that's for damn sure. 27, do better at higher altitudes. Oh, I do love being up on top of mountains. I don't know if that has to do with something about the oxygen in the blood. I don't know why that would be. But there has been a kind of witch hunt for Rh negative people. Look at who's being targeted. Yes, it is white people, but are they perhaps not targeting the Rh negative people in particular? Rh negative is much more common within white people than within the other people of the world. And it seems that the reason that Rh negative is in any of these other non-white groups is because of ancient interbreeding or more recent interbreeding. And that's where they got the Rh negative from. So this white genocide campaign could have a particular focus to eliminate the Rh negative threat that they see. Let me read a little bit here from some blog. Who exactly is the U.S. government kidnapping on a regular basis in order to ship them off to underground laboratories in Nevada, Utah, or Colorado for quite deliberate human experimentation purposes? Why are Rh negative blood types more likely to be victims of governmental alien abductions? So, oh yeah, Rh negative people are abducted by aliens all the time, disproportionate amount. So why? The American government, as it turns out, has an insatiable appetite for remote viewers, telepathics, clairvoyance, clairaudience, you know, auditory, being able to hear from great distances around the world, psychics, and other highly gifted folks whose extrasensory perception is working at a very high level. In fact, the U.S. Armed Services and various intelligence agencies have aggressively recruited special individuals who have proven to be valuable military and or intelligence assets. Why not? What better way to gain a strategic advantage over an adversary during times of war or economic conflict? Except that in many cases, many of these folks are bribed or blackmailed, coerced, or forced to take on their often dubious assignments. These modern-day prophets are just like the seers and sages of old who could literally see into the future. They were the oracles and soothsayers of yesteryear, as they are the futurists and prognosticators of today. The vast majority of them are completely unknown to their communities, but the government knows who they are, given the efficacy of the NSA spying and surveillance network, which effectively owns and operates the World Wide Web. Only those who are not telephonically and digitally connected are relatively free from such microscopic scrutiny of their lives and communications. It ought to be self-evident, then, why the government has been tracking these folks so closely since World War II. Quick aside, in the X-Men series, Professor Xavier has this big spherical thing, I forget what it's called, where he's able to geolocate essentially any single mutant in the world, people with special powers. Oh yeah, they've been tracking every single person who they put in the gifted category for quite some time. The militaries of the Western Allies were greatly aided during World War II, apocalyptic conflict, by remote viewers and others who possessed powers of precognition. These second-sighted individuals were regularly put into the service of military intelligence and in some cases were considered indispensable to the successful war effort. Fast forward to the post-World War II world and the emerging deep state, which has become even more enamored with the extrasensory abilities of these gifted human beings with Rh-negative blood, especially the extremely adept O-types, that's Sinead, if only to forever gain advantage over perceived enemies did the leaders of the shadow government employ these prescient observers. Of course, in an effort to maintain their supremacy over the entire civilization, these same ESP types could not be allowed to be utilized by the enemy. Hence, the tracking system began in earnest, and as did the notorious CIA assassination teams, which have fanned out across the planet for decades, taking out perceived threats to the U.S. Empire as deemed necessary. And I have to wonder if this hasn't been going on throughout history. Who was it that Charlemagne mass murdered? Did these populations, the pre-Christians, did they have a large amount of Rh negative people within them? Is that what's been going on for quite some time beneath the surface narrative with things like the witch hunts and the Inquisitions? Could it be that they want to eliminate the Rh negative threat from the face of the world? Yeah, I'd say it's a distinct possibility. You know, there's actually a music video that relates to what we're talking about here tonight. It's by a band, M83, and the music video is Midnight City. I don't know how I came across this. I saw it a few years ago and thought it was interesting. It starts off with these children basically locked up, imprisoned in some facility, and they're being tested for their telekinetic powers, their psychic mind-reading abilities, things like that. And they're obviously very sad about it. And they plot their escape using their powers, and then they go and unleash all their powers after they get free of the governmental control and defeat some bad guys or something like that. But at the end, they all are on top of a building, and they're staring into the sun as it sets, and then their eyes all glow a bluish color, and then it ends. What is fascinating is that they chose to use pretty much all white children as the children with these super abilities. But just something to check out for the symbolism, for the narrative that's in it. I'll just give you a brief sample of the audio here. Probably heard it. If you haven't seen the music video, do check it out. You know, it kind of reminds me of, well, Professor Xavier's School for the Gifted. The pedo. Professor X of the pedo. Yeah, it seems like this is just a different way of viewing it, where these gifted children are essentially forced to be segregated from the rest of society and continuously examined and tested and studied. And they probably have Rh negative blood. The next thing I'd like to talk about here, the last thing I'll talk about with this short discussion here tonight, is the remote viewing program. Remote viewing, RV, is a procedure developed by parapsychologists at the Stanford Research Institute to allegedly perform clairvoyance under controlled conditions. Somewhat similar to astral projection, the phenomena involves a belief in the projection of consciousness to remote locations and is considered a pseudoscience by mainstream scientists. RV is a form of clairvoyance by which a viewer is said to use his or her clairvoyant abilities to view, i.e. gather information, on a target consisting of an object, place, person, etc., which is hidden from physical view of the viewer and typically separated from the viewer in space by some distance and sometimes separated in time, future or past as well. Remote viewing is distinguished from other forms of clairvoyance in that it follows a specific experimental protocol or some variant of it. The critical aspect common to these protocols, proponents contend, is that the viewer is blind to the target in the sense of being given no or negligible information regarding the target being viewed. While proponents call the remote viewing technique scientific, there is a minority acceptance among scientists for this phenomenon. Critics claim the experiments relied heavily on subjective interpretation of the results and claim that the experiments lacked repeated confirmation under rigorously controlled scientific conditions. Ingo Swann was a prominent American psychic researcher, parapsychologist, artist, and author, best known for his work as a co-creator of the discipline of remote viewing, specifically the Stargate Project. He coined the term remote viewing as a derivation of protocols originally developed by René Walcollier, a French chemical engineer in the early 20th century, documented in the book Mind to Mind. Swann's achievement was to break free from the conventional mold of casual experimentation and candidate burnout and develop a viable set of protocols that put clairvoyance within a framework named Coordinate Remote Viewing, CRV. In 1972, the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency saw a potential use for remote viewing as a way to penetrate closed societies such as the Soviet Union without the actual risk of physical presence of spies or the use of technical intelligence. The CIA was encouraged with the results of early trials, and eventually the U.S. Department of Defense Intelligence Agency obtained funding for further experiments and conduct of actual classified remote viewing operations. Stargate Project was one of a number of code names used to cover remote viewing programs. Other names by which the program was known included Grill Flame and Center Lane, used during the years the unit was managed by the Army, and Sunstreak and Stargate after the unit was taken over by the Defense Intelligence Agency. An earlier program, Scanate, reminds me of the movie Scanners, was funded by the CIA in the early 1970s. Altogether, formal U.S. government involvement, CIA, Air Force, Army, and DIA, in remote viewing lasted from fall 1973 through 1995, June. The program itself evolved from research done at SRI, Stanford Research Institute. The research program was launched partly because some intelligence officers believed a psi gap had emerged between America and the Soviet Union. For example, the reputed abilities of Nina Kulagina, but it was also born of the soul-searching that took place in the American military post-Vietnam and a willingness that subsequently emerged to think outside the box, as exemplified by Jim Channon's 1st Earth Battalion briefing. Remote viewing, or sensing, of places or events is normally performed in the present, but sessions have also been undertaken in the past and future. One of the outcomes from the funding was a set of protocols designed to make clairvoyance a more scientific process and minimize as much as possible session noise and inaccuracy. The term remote viewing emerged as a generalized shorthand to describe this more structured approach to clairvoyance. The project was eventually terminated, according to the official report at the time, because there was insufficient evidence of the utility of the intelligence data produced. However, in the generalized intelligence and defense budget cuts of the period, many projects lost funding. More realistically, the unit was terminated because of managerial failure and the skeptical leanings of key individuals in the DIA and CIA chains of command. In 1995, the project was transferred to the CIA, and a retrospective evaluation of the results was performed. The CIA contracted the American Institutes for Research for this evaluation. An analysis conducted by Professor Jessica Utz showed a statistically significant effect. While agreeing with this basic analysis, noted longtime CSI COP psychic debunker Ray Hyman suggested the results were not enough on their own, and a wider data set was required. Based upon Ray's findings that the intelligence utility was yet to be demonstrated, even if it was a real phenomenon, the CIA followed the recommendation to terminate the project. This is kind of interesting. Key project personnel. Firstly, it should be noted, there is no comprehensive formal history of the project, and there may well be key members who have chosen to remain anonymous. However, certain members of the project have come forward, and certain details of the personnel are available. major general, and a lot of these people are represented in the Men Who Stare at Goats, which is based on the real program, the First Earth Battalion and the Stargate program. Major General Albert Stubblebein, a key sponsor of the research internally at Fort Meade, convinced of the reality of a wide variety of psychic phenomena. He never mastered walking through walls, although he did greatly bruise his nose in numerous attempts. In the early 1980s, was responsible for Army intelligence. Some commentators have confused Project Jedi, run by Special Forces primarily, out of Fort Bragg, with Stargate. In fact, General Stubblebein was poorly received when he visited Fort Bragg and did not participate nor was aware of the Goat Lab experiments being conducted. Joe McGonagall. In the early 1970s, Joe had a near-death experience that bestowed him with exceptional psychic powers. Widely considered a natural, Joe has stated that remote viewing ability is predominantly determined by innate talent. While many disagree with this statement, it is notable none of his critics seems to be able to work at the same level as Joe. Joe's definition implies that remote viewing is any psychic undertaking that is performed under scientific protocols. Lynn Buchanan, a sergeant brought in by General Stubblebein for two main reasons. Firstly, extraordinary telekinetic abilities. Secondly, computer software expertise. This made him exceptionally well qualified to be the database manager for the Stargate project. From this vantage point, Lynn had the opportunity to work with all the key members of the unit and in possession of statistical analysis of the session data. Was able to properly assess the accuracy of the session data obtained. After leaving the forces, Lynn found problems. He founded Problems Innovation Solutions, contracted Mel Riley to work for his company, and continues to undertake private tuition. Mel Riley, Army sergeant who retired in 1990. Mel is another natural psychic and was noted for being able to describe what lay under objects in aerial photography. This aroused inconclusive interest in the 1970s. The only viewer to serve two separate tours with the military remote viewing unit, Mel was first assigned in early 1979, but was later transferred to a conventional intelligence unit in 1981. In mid-1986, he was reassigned as a remote viewer, serving in the RV unit until his retirement in June 1990. Based upon his innate ability with training in the CRV protocols, Mel quickly became an impressive remote viewer. Mel was featured in the documentary released in 1995 by the BBC titled The Real X-Files. He has recounted his past life experiences as a Native American and continues to be involved in Native American culture, enjoying a quiet life with his wife. Paul H. Smith, retired U.S. Army major and intelligence officer, Paul was one of the five people trained as a prototype test subject in Ingo Swann's psychic development of the coordinate remote viewing CRV protocols in 1983. Paul was assigned to the unit from September 1983 through August of 1990. At that point, he was reassigned to the 101st Airborne Division for Desert Storm because of his past experience as an Arabic linguist and Middle East specialist. In early 1986, he transitioned with the rest of the remote viewing unit from the Army to the Defense Intelligence Agency organization, serving full-time with the unit through the rest of the decade. He was the main author of what is known today as the OCRV manual, which was written at the end of the CRV training contract with SRI to capture Ingo Swann's training procedures for use with future CRV trainees. Though having previously demonstrated no natural psychic abilities, Paul experienced considerable success with the CRV methodology, and besides being a successful operational viewer, also became one of the most prominent of the CRV trainers. He is the author of the book Reading the Enemy's Mind Inside Stargate, America's Psychic Espionage Unit. Ed Dames, one of the first five, were trained by Ingo Swann in the coordinate remote viewing protocols, quickly established a reputation for pushing CRV to extremes with target sessions on Atlantis, Mars, UFOs, and aliens. Many in the unit despised him for this. Joe McGonagall has expressed the opinion session feedback is required to learn CRV, and this could not be obtained when targeting such unverifiable locations. Eventually, Mel Riley got so fed up with Ed a fake session was arranged when they described Santa coming over the North Pole in his sleigh. With his ever-active imagination, Ed immediately deduced an object over the North Pole was a nuclear attack and was set to call the highest levels of the military before he was informed of the prank. Internally, his reputation never recovered. David Morehouse. Dames brought David Morehouse into the DIA's remote viewing unit during its final days. David has a somewhat troubled past and is primarily notable for producing a largely fictionalized account of the limited time he spent as a remote viewer called Psychic Warrior. So there's something to this, folks. They wouldn't have spent all of this time and money on this project if this wasn't a real phenomenon. And what's interesting is that there are people who are able to follow the protocols and become clairvoyant without any history of having any seemingly innate ability within this field. I've mentioned Rh negative because it seems to be a powerful bloodline, and it seems that a lot of these abilities are connected to it. But that does not mean by any chance that people with Rh positive blood cannot be extremely powerful as well, especially if they are trained to unlock these abilities. Humans are incredibly powerful, but we're only focused in on this very small sliver of what we consider to be reality. And you just look at what is all of the different wavelengths that are just outside of the access of our five senses. Think of just all of the incredible amounts of invisible things that we just cannot perceive surrounding us daily, including just television radio signals. So the way I view it is that you've got all this invisible information flowing around us all of the time, but we're not tuned, we're not set to be able to receive it. You can be a bit like a radio picking up, or a TV picking up, with your old bunny ears, the old school bunny ears, these invisible signals. And if you're able to tune in properly, you're able to get a clear picture of something that is originating halfway around the world. It's pretty incredible. And within this area of clairvoyance, I think lies, well, perhaps some of our solutions for waging a war against an elite that has just seemingly an inexhaustible supply of money and other resources at their disposal. All this military might. How do we go toe-to-toe with this behemoth, with this great beast? Well, by unlocking our incredible potential. All right, everyone. I hope you found this little dive into this subject to be interesting, thought-provoking. Sinead will have her show coming up tomorrow night, the Roundtable, and then my show. So please do stay tuned. I'll be back for some more blitzes next week. Take care, everyone. Thanks a lot to anyone who does support the network. Please go on over to heathenherbs.com, buy some products, and also, if you're feeling generous, do become a subscriber. You can go over to the right side of the RenegadeBroadcasting.com site, and underneath the donate button, there's a link where you can set up a contribution to come through each month. That really does help because it provides a little bit of stability. And no, I am not using my psychic powers to try to get you to donate. This is all very overt, just letting you know. All right, everyone. I'm going to close this out with a Pink Floyd song, Nobody Home. I think you'll understand why if you listen to the lyrics. Well, somebody else needs taking care of in Washington. Yeah. Rose. Black book with
my poems in. Got a bag, got a toothbrush and a comb in. When I'm a good dog, they sometimes throw me a bone. I got elastic bands keeping my shoes on. Got those swollen hand blues. I got 13 channels of shit on the TV to choose from. I got electric light. I got second sight. Got amazing powers of observation. That is how I know. When I try to get through on the telephone to you, there'll be nobody home. Boots, and I got feeding.